The Blood of Naboth Avenged, Chapter 95. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, is sick. He lies upon his bed in his palace in Damascus, which is the capital of Syria. He hears that Elisha, the prophet from Israel, of whom he already has heard so much, is in the city. He immediately calls Hazael, one of his most distinguished servants, and gives him orders to look for the prophet. "Take a present," he says. "Go to him and tell him that I have sent you, and inquire of the Lord by him whether I shall recover from this sickness." Such a great difference between Ben-Hadad and Ahaziah, the king of Israel. Ahaziah fell through the lattice, and he sent messengers to Baal-zebub, the lord of the fly. Ben-Hadad is a heathen king, and he goes to inquire of the Lord, the God of Israel. Hazael immediately takes a large gift and goes to seek Elisha. He soon finds him. "Shall the king recover from his sickness?" he asks. Elisha answers, "Return to your master and tell him that he will not recover. The Lord has made known to me that he shall die." Both men stand silently together for a moment. Elisha looks intently at this Syrian. Suddenly, the prophet begins to weep. "Why do you weep?" Hazael asks in astonishment, for he cannot understand why the prophet weeps so bitterly. "Because I know how much evil you will do to my nation," Elisha answers sorrowfully. "You shall burn the cities of Israel with fire. You shall kill thousands of soldiers. You shall cruelly murder the little children, and you shall mistreat and kill the women of Israel." "Shall I do that?" Hazael asks in extreme astonishment. "How is that possible? I am only an ordinary man." "Yes, you shall do all these cruel deeds, for you shall become king over Syria in the place of Ben-Hadad," Elisha informs him. Hazael returns to the royal palace and to Ben-Hadad. As soon as he enters, the king asks anxiously, "What did Elisha the prophet say? Shall I recover?" Without a blush, Hazael answers, "He said that you shall surely recover." "That is not true, Hazael. That is an outright lie. You change the words of Elisha." Hazael does this purposely to set Ben-Hadad at ease. Besides, Hazael wants to prevent Ben-Hadad from immediately appointing a new king who will be his successor. That is why Hazael deceives the king. The following morning, Hazael takes a thick cloth, dips it in water, and puts this wet cloth over the face of Ben-Hadad. Now the king cannot breathe. Within a few moments, he suffocates. It is written in the Bible that Hazael became king in his place. Thus, he became the new ruler over the mighty kingdom of Syria. But he is a wicked king, a cruel man, and a murderer. What will be the outcome? A severe battle is being fought at Ramoth, which is in Gilead on the other side Jordan. This city is one of the cities of refuge. Joram, the king of Israel, is fighting against Hazael, the new king of Syria. It is a fierce battle. Valiantly the Israelites defend themselves, so that it is impossible for Hazael to make the army of Israel flee. However, Joram the king is seriously wounded. Therefore, Joram does not remain with the army, but returns to his palace in Jezreel, where he will take a complete rest. By doing this, he hopes his wounds will heal more rapidly. His soldiers remain at Ramoth-Gilead under the command of a few officers. One day, these army officers sit together in a house. No doubt they are making new plans to defeat the Syrians and to drive them from the land, because as long as Hazael is not expelled, the danger remains. Suddenly, the door is opened, and a young prophet enters. He is a son of a prophet, thus a student from one of the schools for the prophets. The officers who are present look at him in astonishment. What does he want here? With an inquiring look upon their faces, they await his message. I have a message for you, O captain, he says. Jehu, one of the officers, quickly asks, Who do you want? We are here together with several officers. The prophet answers, I have a message for you. Immediately, Jehu stands up and goes with the young prophet into another room. As soon as Jehu shuts the door behind him, the young prophet takes from under his clothing a jar of oil and pours it on the head of Jehu. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, the prophet says solemnly, I have anointed thee king over the people of the Lord, even over Israel. Thou shalt smite the entire house of Ahab, because he refused to worship me, and also because he caused innocent Naboth to be stoned. As soon as he is finished speaking, he opens the door and runs away as fast as he can. Jehu stares after him in amazement. Before Jehu really could realize what has taken place, the prophet has disappeared from sight. Elisha, the prophet, had sent this young prophet to Ramoth-Gilead to anoint Jehu king over Israel. At this time, Joram, the son of Ahab, had reigned 12 years. For 12 years, the Lord had patience with Joram, and delivered him wonderfully, time after time. But Joram continually refused to serve the Lord. He became more ungodly. He listened more and more to the wrong advice of his crafty mother, Jezebel. But the time has come that the Lord will bring upon Ahab's family the punishment which was foretold long before by his servant Elijah. Therefore, Jehu is anointed king over Israel. He will be the means in God's hand to wipe out the house of Ahab. Jehu shall destroy to the last man that ungodly family. When Elisha had sent the son of the prophet to Ramoth-Gilead with that commission, he had told the young prophet to flee as soon as Jehu was anointed. This young man followed the orders of Elisha exactly, and immediately after the anointing of Jehu, he ran hastily from the house and left Jehu standing alone in the room. When Jehu finally recovers from his amazement, he returns to his comrades, the other officers. They are very curious to know what the prophet had said to him. Why did this mad fellow come to you? they say, while a mocking grin lies upon their faces. Do you hear that, boys and girls? They call this prophet a mad fellow. We can see by this that they are ungodly mockers who do not have the least respect for the servants of the Lord. Do you also speak this way about the ministers, the servants of God? I hope you are not so bold as to do such a thing, even more that you do not want to do it. However, Jehu would like to be silent about what has happened, but they want to know, so they keep asking. Finally, Jehu gives in and informs them that he was anointed to be king over Israel. Behold, the other officers quickly jump from their seats. They make a sort of cushion with their clothing, and they lay them on a high place and set Jehu upon it. They do this to honor him. Immediately they acknowledge him as their sovereign. They give him the honor which is due to a king. Besides, it is a sign they shall obey him. They blow upon the trumpets so that the soldiers will hear it too. They shout rejoicingly, "Jehu is king." When Jehu notices that his companions honor him as their king and that they will obey him, he immediately gives this order: "Be sure that no one leaves the city. Joram, the son of Ahab, must not know what has taken place before I come into Jezreel." Immediately, his order is obeyed and executed. Was it for that reason the young prophet had to flee, so that he would not be temporarily made a prisoner? Joram, who is still in Jezreel recuperating from his wounds, has a visitor. His nephew Ahaziah, the king of Judah, the son of Athaliah, has come to see how his uncle is getting along. The rest and quietness in the royal palace at Jezreel has done Joram much good. The wounds which he had received in the battle at Ramoth-Gilead are almost healed. Joram thinks it very nice that his nephew, the son of his sister Athaliah, has come to visit him. While these two kings are talking together, suddenly the bugle is blown from the top of the tower. That is the sign from the watchman on the wall of Jezreel that someone or something is coming toward the city. Joram inquires what the reason is for the blowing of the bugle. The watchman answers, "I see a few chariots coming far in the distance." "Oh," Joram thinks, "no doubt they are messengers from the army which I have left behind in Ramoth-Gilead." He sends a horseman to meet them with the question, "Is it peace?" He means, "Do you bring good or evil tidings?" The watchman watches this horseman meet the group. At once a look of bewilderment comes upon the face of the watchman, because the horseman does not return, but remains with the approaching group. That message is given to Joram. When the king hears this, he immediately sends another horseman. Neither does this one return. In the meantime, the approaching chariots come nearer, so near that the watchman can see who is coming. "He is Jehu," he says to the king. "I can recognize him, for he is riding furiously." Joram is not satisfied. Do you know what? He will go personally to meet Jehu. "Will you go with me, Ahaziah?" he asks the king of Judah. "Yes, uncle, I will go with you," he answers. They quickly harness the horses in front of the chariots and ride next to each other through the gates of Jezreel. Soon they approach Jehu. "Is it peace, Jehu?" Joram calls. He means, "Why are you coming? Do you bring a good or an evil message?" "Listen," Jehu shouts back. "What peace? As long as your ungodly mother Jezebel plays master over you, and as long as the idols are worshipped, there cannot be any peace." Joram immediately understands what his army officer means. Of course, he does not know that Jehu has been anointed to be king by a prophet of the Lord, but Joram knows by Jehu's answer that he has come to do him harm. "It is treachery, Ahaziah," he says to his nephew, the king of Judah, who is riding next to him. "Let us try to escape as quickly as possible." He already has turned his chariot around. Jehu sees that. Jehu quickly takes his bow, puts an arrow into it, aims, and shoots. The arrow whizzes away and hits the king of Israel in his heart. Joram sinks down and dies. His effort to escape is unsuccessful. Jehu caused his dead body to be cast upon a piece of ground at the side of the road. It is land which once belonged to Naboth, who was innocently stoned because he would not sell his vineyard to Ahab. God is righteous, boys and girls. Ahab had shed the blood of innocent Naboth. Now the blood of one of his sons stains the ground of Naboth. The body of Joram is not buried. It will be devoured by the wild beasts and birds of prey. Didn't the prophet Elijah prophesy this? In the meantime, Ahaziah, the king of Judah, flees. But it does him no good. He is pursued, overtaken, and slain. However, the corpse of Ahaziah does not remain unburied. His servants, who had accompanied him upon the journey to Jezreel, take it to Jerusalem, and Ahaziah is buried there. The watchman on the tower of Jezreel could see all this from his high position. He tells the story to those within the wall. Jezebel, the mother of Joram, also hears it. She does not flee. No, she will remain. Neither could she flee anymore. It already was too late to do so. She clothes herself in her best clothing. She paints her face, and she beautifies her hair. Doesn't Jezebel know that she too will be slain? Yes, she can readily understand that. Jehu did not spare Joram, neither will he spare her. She need not expect any mercy. Why does she do what she did? Perhaps she hoped that Jehu would begin to fear when he saw the queen in her stately clothes. After Jezebel had put on her royal garments, she sits in front of a window and awaits the arrival of Jehu. She doesn't have to wait very long. Jehu soon rides through the gate of Jezreel and presently stands before the royal palace. As soon as Jezebel sees him, she mockingly calls out, "Had Zimri peace who slew his master?" Oh, how strange. What does Jezebel mean by this? You still know, boys and girls, who Zimri was and what he did? We told you about him in chapter 85. Zimri also murdered his sovereign, and he only reigned 1 week. He was punished very quickly. Omri, the father of Ahab, came with an army, and when Zimri saw that he could not win, he set fire to the royal palace and perished in the flames. Thus he burned to death. Jezebel now refers to Jehu as Zimri. It is as though she said, "Yes, Jehu, you did kill the king, and you probably are thinking that you have conquered. But you are a murderer, and the punishment shall speedily come upon you." She insults Jehu. However, Jehu does not give her an answer. He sees a few courtiers standing behind the ungodly queen. "Who of you will help me?" he asks them. Three courtiers look down at him as though they would say, "You can depend upon us." Jehu commands them, "Take her and throw her out the window." They immediately obey by taking the queen and throwing her down. With a dull thud, the queen falls to the street. Her blood splashes against the wall. Jehu lets the horses trample upon her corpse. That is his answer to her insult. Afterward, he goes to eat, for he is hungry. After his meal, he thinks of Jezebel and says to his servants, "Go see this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter." He calls her cursed. He doesn't have much respect for Jezebel. She has done a great deal of wickedness in her lifetime. Still, he gives orders that she must be buried. When his servants come to the place where she should have been lying, they do not find her corpse. The dogs of Jezreel, which are running loose, already have torn and devoured her body. Only the skull, the hands, and the feet still lie there. O boys and girls, the word of Elijah is being fulfilled just as he had prophesied. He prophesied and that the dogs would eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. This had now taken place. That is the dreadful end of this wicked queen Jezebel. And how shall our end be? If we do not listen to the warnings of the Lord, the eternal punishment awaits us. But if by God's grace we live in the fear of the Lord, our end will be peace.